anything that involves growth, that involves building, takes a village. It takes collaboration, it takes teamwork, and it takes support. So what makes a great music community is supporting each other, is, you know, showing each other that love. But also, like I said, it's each one teach one, learn and grow together.
This is Champagne Is Also a Band podcast. One songwriter, one song. I'm Sven, your host for a journey into the music of Champaign-Urbana. Recorded in the Blue Box Studio with a songwriter from the Champaign-Urbana music scene, past or present. Champagne Is Also a Band podcast is proud to be a part of the Champagne Showers podcast network.
Welcome to Champagne Is Also a Band podcast. Today, I have Simba P. And you may know Simba P from The Great Thinkas. And I'm very excited to have him here as my guest. So, Simba P, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. So glad to be here, man.
Today, we're going to be listening to your song, Failure Is Not an Option, featuring Mother Nature, off of the 2003 album As Above, So Below.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Without further ado, let's listen to the song.
Nigga, I got it. Straight to the league, I bought no college. Took a few passes to flip that pocket. Took a few racks to make that profit. Rack it all up, put it in that wallet. Fool for the thought when you create that knowledge. What you gonna do when the shit get rocking? How you gonna move when it ain't no stopping? I told my mama I need her. My pain and problems, my teacher. Ain't got no call for my preacher. Always talk to God cause I need her. Gonna pay the fee for my feature. That aura glow through them ethers. My purpose strong is my reason. My weed to blow with my season. Young nigga from the two done grown up. From a jig to a motherfucking grown up. Stay heavy on a nigga, no fold ups. No breaks on a nigga, no hold ups. Got eights on a nigga, I roll up. Don't file it or put me in a bonus. Can't roll with a nigga, don't know ya. Put your hand down cause I don't owe ya. Good joints on a nigga, I smoke it. No pills, I don't need no coca. Got chills cause this shit got colder. No deal, so you can't get over. Back in for the motherfucking get back. Guaranteed I'ma always get a lid back. You ain't really with the game, need to get back. Why you walking in the motherfucking kickback?
Cause we on a mission, I got plans for that. Going across the map, ain't got no strings attached. Working on my growth, I found my own an ancestor, ain't with the stress and all. Got a confession, y'all. God gave me this low, so I can't fail it all.
Word of my pots feel like pot, like I'm prodigy. My therapist proud of me. I pay to play, but my problems empower me. My partner's a part of me. So all that I plotted and potted our property. Word of apostrophes. I'm still getting mine though. Pushed through apocalypse. I'm in my own time zone. No peace and dichotomy. Eyes like isosceles. Gotta triangles with thoughts getting tangles. Hip hop, no hypocrisy. Think about nature.
I got plans for that.
Welcome back. So, Simba, my first and favorite question to always ask is, what came first? Was it the music or was it the lyrics?
The music actually came first on this one. This beat is a beat that I kind of bought when I was like probably 16 or 17 at the time. I had bought just like a pack of beats, and I had did my research, so I knew to make sure to get the stems when I got the beats. So at first, it was just me listening to the beat that I had bought, just going back to the beat pack. It was like 25 beats, so I just kind of like expanded these beats throughout many projects. I sat down with it, and the lyrics just kind of came to my brain. I was like, oh, this is from Mother Nature, and
yeah.
I sent it over to them.
Interesting. So just to clarify for the listeners, the stems are actually, or stems mm-hmm. are basically the individual tracks of, say, like an instrument
yeah.
or specifically like a part of the drum or
yeah.
whatever, so that you can kind of mix and match
mix
if you want to.
You know what I'm saying? You yeah. can take some things out, which is what HK, he's the executive producer on the project. That's what he did. He went in there and like put some drops in there, added some stuff,
yeah.
to was able to take some things out like that, really spice it up and make it more fun. So, you know, that's that. But that didn't happen until the post-production.
When you write lyrics, do you usually, I don't know, does it start off as I'm listening to the tracks over mm-hmm. and over and rapping over them, or is it just like you kind of have something written, or do you just, I don't know, yeah.
Most of the time when I'm creating, when it's something new, I always try to start from scratch for the most part. I always try to see what the beat is telling me, see what I'm feeling with that beat or the music in general, because, you know, music is vibrations, you know what I'm saying? It's energy, so I need to know where this vibration is taking me. So, and then from there, I just start writing, and it could go one way or it can go another way. It's kind of just flowing through me at that point. I'm thinking, but it's just what's coming to my head, and I'm putting it down and then going back and refining it.
Let the music lead you, but also lead into the music mm-hmm. a little bit. So basically don't let the music do all the steering, but
yeah.
kind of direct the music itself.
Yeah, or let the music direct me, because like I said, it's speaking through the soul, really. So it's... As much as I'm letting the music lead me into it, I'm meeting the music halfway. I'm meeting it halfway, and we're working in tandem in that sense, and then with spirit and vibration.
Yeah. Since you mentioned the vibe or mm-hmm. or the vibrations of the beats, what was the vibration you were getting off of this one? And do you think that you met that with your lyrics?
I was feeling kind of braggadocious, you know. I was also feeling inspired. I was definitely at a space in my life where I was just doing a lot of creating, and I was prepping myself for what was to come in terms of what I seen for my future. The way that this beat kind of made me feel, it just matched my intention at the time, and I was just like, okay, I can't fail. There is no failure, is not an option. That's why it's called
right.
that. It started off as a song called Knowledge, and just speaking on what I know and what I've learned and how I got to where I am, but also, you know, popping my shit, you know, in terms of, like I said, I felt braggadocious, but also like letting you know, like, no, this is where I came from, and this
right.
is how I got here, and I'm only gonna go further. Failure is not an option. It just made me feel like I could do anything.
That's interesting. Like, my impression, or at least how the way that I felt about it when I was listening to it, was it didn't hit me as like braggadocious.
Mm-hmm.
It hit me as more of kind of encouraging yourself, right?
That too.
Like you're supporting yourself.
Yeah.
And there's some elements in this where it's you talking about having to do it on your own, but also the people that you end up relying on
yeah.
at the same time. Sorry to even go like larger, but I feel like hip hop has that characteristic of there's really no, I mean, unless you produce, record, do all these kinds of elements, like it's a community. It's like
yeah.
it's made by so many other people coming together to make a song at the end. I don't know, I just thought that this in a way kind of represented all of that at the same time. So
and it does. You're actually absolutely correct in that sense, because that's why I called on to Truth and Clef for that collaboration. You know, one of the lyrics was, I told my mama I need her, my pain and problems my teacher, you know, like
mm-hmm.
all of those things. It does take having the love of your mother, to, you know what I'm saying, having the love of people around you and care to be able to be able to know, no, I need you to get this far. I needed you to get this far, and all of that. And, you know, like, also relying on what you've learned from your experience, from your journey, to encourage you, to push forward, to be like, no, I can't fail.
I don't know if this is always typical, but usually when, if you have someone who is featured on a project, isn't it standard for them to write their own lyrics?
Yeah, for the most part. I believe for them. I mean, I can't speak to how every artist does it. I know, like, for us, we're hip-hop. And that's, you know, when it's hip-hop, you write your own stuff. You know what I'm saying?
When you're
singing and R&B and all that other stuff, you know, it's fine to for other people to write it for you. That's not a problem. But, you know, typically the unspoken rule in hip-hop is, you know, you write your own stuff. But in this instance, you know, me and Mother Nature have been working together for however many years now. So it's like at that space and time, it was just supernatural. They just picked up off my energy. You know what I'm saying? You can kind of see it. I kind of pulled them into my realm of things, into my world of, like, the auto-tune and the sound and the sonics of it all. You know, it's not something that Mother Nature typically does, for real, But it was fun to be able to pull them into that element and have them write their own lyrics and things like that. And it just elevated the song so much, and they just kind of matched everything I was going for.
I guess that, for me, that was a long way of me asking, because the lyrics that you just highlighted, you know, my pain and problems, my teacher. I drew a line over into the verse that Mother Nature did, and it's like, but my problems empower me, my partner's a part of me. And I was just thinking about how they had drawn this nice little parallel between something that you had said in a verse before. And so I was curious, did they actually hear your lyrics before and then write, or did you simultaneously, like, write? I'm just curious, because there's a very, like, ex nihilo kind of, where did that come from? How was it created? How did these concepts come together at the same? Because I feel like verse one, verse two, they both have, there's a cohesion, right?
Yeah.
Like, the theme is there for both.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't necessarily deviate. I'm sorry if I'm just talking
too much.
No, you're good. I'm getting all kind of excited.
No, you're good. Get the size you want.
Okay.
All good. To answer your question, this was something that, we didn't write this together. We weren't in the same room when we wrote this one. I did this a while before they even got to it. And I told them I was holding it for them. And they came to town. They had moved to Houston at that time. They had came back to Chicago, and I was still living at ThinkSpace at that time, where we do a lot of our recording and things like that. They came through, and I think I was doing some acting at that time while they were actually recording it, but I had already sent it to them well before that and told them, this is for y'all, I want y'all to do this. So I'm sure they had already taken their time, formulated, and really sat down and listened to the song and all that other stuff when they got to the house, and then just did what they did. But also, like I said, we've been collaborating and working together for a while now. Me, honestly, with all the thinkers, it's kind of, we just know each other to that point. So I'm sure, like, it was a supernatural thing for them to just match my energy and, like, match exactly the theme. Plus, because at first, like I said, the song was called Knowledge. So we was all just, like, talking about the knowledge that we had gained. And, like, as well as, you know, talking our shit.
Yeah. I guess maybe for me, having someone feature on your work and then having them, I guess you could say, let them do what they do best, right? I mean, that's the idea. That's why you ask somebody to feature, is because you know that they have a particular skill set and they're going to just deliver. Maybe this is just me, because of my own process in terms of creative things, is I tend to be a very solitary, I want to create things, good or bad, however you want to say it, in its own vacuum with just me. Do you ever have any kind of nerves about, like, giving that part, or do you know that that's the way to really put the shine on it?
You know? Whenever I, like, think of a feature, whenever I'm thinking of features, it's specifically with that person or that artist in mind. So for me, in this instance, I kind of knew, but it's never like when I'm making, I know this is going to be for this artist. So once I got to that point and it was done and I was done with what I was going to do, I was like, oh, I hear Mother Nature on this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, okay, this is for them. And because I knew, hey, they're going crazy over there. Because I knew, I kind of just shot it right to him. So, like, anytime I reach out, I'm fully trusting that feature, that artist, because I know what they can do. There's never really a doubt in my mind when it comes to somebody I want to feature on a project or when I'm collaborating with somebody. Typically, I know their work, or we've talked and we've built a certain relationship before then to make me even be comfortable enough to collaborate with them, because, you know, music is a very intimate thing.
Yeah,
you know, that's one thing that I have to have. We just got to be comfortable with each other in that sense, to kind of just know how we can work.
Once you had the beat, you knew it was going to be put together. You already put the lyrics together. You had invited Mother Nature to be the feature. How did that get pulled together? The studio that you work in is...
It was called ThinkSpace. It was pretty much like a living space that a lot of the thinkers was living in at the time, but also it doubled as our creative space as well. So we had like one studio, and it was basically two apartments side by side. So one side we used for the studio, other side we used for like video production and all that other stuff.
Nice.
So like I was in the studio at that time, and I was just creating records for As Above, So Below. And as I'm just creating things, I'm just like, okay, this is what needs to go here. This is what I hear for this. This is what I hear for this. That's kind of my process when I'm making an album, because this was just specifically for the album. This wasn't a single. This was
right.
I need this for the album, and I want this to smack people in the face. I want it to be a surprise track. I don't want people to know that this is coming, type of thing.
Right.
So it's like when I was building and working on that with that in mind, it kind of just became that. I was like, okay, who's going to hit the hardest on this? Also, how can I make this pop in such a way that it's different? And I was like, okay, Mother Nature's never really done no song like this before in this essence. And I've already done a song called Space Jam with Jeff and Sky. Okay, I need something with Mother Nature, my other collective man.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So I was like, okay, so to match their energy and what we did on that one, because like you said earlier, you know, just letting them get on there and do their thing and like do whatever they want. I did that with Jeff and Sky for Space Jam. So it's like... So it's like I wanted to give Mother Nature that exact same treatment, just because I know what they can do. I know how they do it. They're the ones who taught me to do what I do. So it was just that trust factor is there, you know?
I feel like going into some of the lyrics too, but I'm also enjoying just kind of talking about the overall process of putting it together. I guess backing up a little bit, the first thing is you said that you wanted this song to like hit you in the face, like be the thing that snaps. I think that's interesting. You said that, and I was like, you know, there's barely any introduction on this song. It's just like, boom, and then you're just into the lyrics.
Yeah.
usually it's like you have to kind of get into the groove. You have to think about it a little bit. The person starts speaking, and then you figure out kind of where it's headed. I feel like this kind of just, as you said, like hits you in the face, and you don't necessarily have time to think about it. It's like you're in deep.
Yeah,
right?
I wanted to pull you in. I wanted to get you in there, because this is the second track on the project.
Yeah.
And when I was creating the project and doing the sequencing for it and trying to make the track list and everything like that, I was like, okay, I want the first two tracks to really be hard, because the intro is short, you know? I didn't want to give people too much time. Like I said, I wanted to smack you in the face. So right after The Death of My Ego is done, Failure's Not an Option hits right then and there, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I got it. Straight to the league, I bought no college, you know, just really like letting it be known, yeah, I'm here. I'm here now, and this is what's happening. I'm here to stay, and I'm only going to get better. And failure is not an option, type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I wanted for that, because I knew that the first track was short. It was an intro. I wanted it that way, but I wanted the next track to really be like, hold that attention, to be the thing that made you want to listen to what was coming after that song, you know?
Because
typically people listen to that first three, then they may venture off into the next artist or what have you. So my goal was to make sure that those first three tracks were hitting.
You have the hook, but you have kind of a pre-hook that Mother Nature does, the "Hezzy on the Mission, I got plans for that."
Mm-hmm.
How did that kind of come about? Like, how was that decided, like, you know, to lead into that? And, and was that hook actually created by Mother Nature as part of the feature?
Yeah, that was Truth. That was mostly Truth's verse. I'm going to have to ask them just to be sure. I wasn't there when they did their verses, so I don't know exactly what their process was when they did it. I do know that, like, Truth's pen game is crazy. So she knows me as well, and she knows the art that I wanted to create and where that art is coming from. So, you know, I believe she kind of just took that knowledge and took what I had already written, just added to that context and built upon it.
Because
throughout her whole verse, she was spitting knowledge, you know? She was dropping gems. My favorite part is the "hell was built all by yourself," you know what I'm saying? Little did you know. Like, and I was like, damn, that was such a crazy thing to put in there, because it's that balance, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's that levy. So that hook was something that Truth definitely came up with, I believe. I love her for it, so I kind of just kept it in there because it was perfect. It fit like a dream, you know?
Honestly, though, if you want to talk about just lyrics, I usually don't have three columns on my notes. Like, usually there's about two, and then I make the font smaller and smaller. There's just so much to it. And you had said earlier, the name of this was, what was the name of it again?
The song?
Yeah.
Failure's Not an Option.
But I mean, originally.
Oh, originally it was called Knowledge, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because I was noticing that that is, that, I guess, the pre-hook or whatever you want to call it. Working on my growth, because you had mentioned it's about growth. It's about, I found my own knowledge. And then thanking Ancestor, I always think about one of the biggest bases of knowledge is like, what have we gleaned from those before us, right?
Yes,
so
yes,
it's like what gets passed down.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's so very, I don't want to say like just compact, like so much, like just those are three lines, but
yeah,
it like packs in. I don't know. I enjoy that a lot. Like it just,
thank you.
Makes so much sense. I'm kind of fascinated by the person that was finally mixing this down and then decided to do kind of the drops and, and additions and subtractions. Everybody recorded all of their lyrics, right?
Yeah. And then, HK kind of came in. HK, who was the executive producer for this entire project, he came in there and, you know, after everything was recorded, after everything is done, and typically when I create, I try to do all of my skeleton work first. I try to do all of the body work first before I even go to another studio and re-record and do master tracks or send it out to anything like that. I mix it down to the best of my ability. I record everything to where I feel like it's done, and I can pass it on to HK, and he'll cook that up and do exactly what he does with that. That was really the process for that end of it. Let's get the skeleton work done. Everything else, HK will spice it up in post-production.
Sorry, it's just making me, I know I'm going to use this completely incorrectly, but it's almost like HK gets to have his own feature on this as well. Did that blow you away when it's like, it comes back to you and you get to hear how it's all been mixed down? And then, to me, it's like, I've done a lot of writing of my own stuff, and as I said, you know, I sometimes do this all in a vacuum. I kind of almost wouldn't mind the idea of having something like, I kind of throw something out into the universe and then it comes back to you and it's been shined up, or it has something that has a surprise even for you, the writer, composer, whatever. Like, I don't know, I kind of envy you for having able to have that moment where it's just like it comes back and it has some, a new shine on it, you
know? Man, it's crazy because with damn near not every record on this project, but a lot of the songs on this project, they've gone through so many different versions, you know, of what it was. How this sounded now as its final version, it did not sound like that when we were making it before it got to where it is now. And, you know, HK is a mastermind when it comes to that. He kind of knows what's a put in there, knows what I want, listens to what I want, and will work with me on that. So, yeah, he does get to have his own feature. He does get to have his creative input on that. And I let him know, I'm like, no, I trust your creative vision. Do what you want with that beat, because I know that you're going to make it the best that it could possibly be. You know, I always have my revisions. I always have, you know, what I want to make sure that it meets the vision that I want for the project. But in terms of the collaboration of it, you know, HK is definitely hands-on with it, and I prefer it to be that way, because you get songs like Failure's Not an Option in the way that it sounds and the production on it. So it's like every time it comes back reshined, it sounds a little different, it shines a little different, it looks a little different, but once you get to that final product, it's like, oh damn, we got it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is it right here.
Nice. I like to kind of take my moment to say what my favorite part of the piece is, and then in turn, of course, ask you what your favorite part is. But there's a point at which kind of everything has dropped out, and it's just very, like, there's the Emerald Peridot where it starts, and it's this really cool ramp up to Welcome to Prophecy, Word to My Pops.
To like Pac, like I'm Prodigy.
Yes, and like
Your favorite part is my favorite part, and that's the craziest thing.
Well, but the thing is that not only is it because the beats work so well at that point, there's a whole like build up, and then it's just like, for me, like the realization that, and I feel like because I'm able to look at the lyrics, this happens, because I don't think I would catch it, but like sometimes you love something and you don't know why, and then you're like, oh, when you get to see kind of how everything's made, you're like, oh, but I love the fact that it's like, to my prophecy, my pops, Pac, Prodigy, and then
my therapist proud of me,
play,
I pay to play,
and then but my problems, partners, plotted property, and you're whoa.
Yeah, Clem is a beast.
It's like, what? But it's these, it's like this, this like, they don't need to do that. Like, but it's like, it's like that extra.
It was overkill, but it was so necessary. It was so worth it.
But then, you know, not only is it like, you can tell that there's, is it fair for me to say like there's fun in the words? Like they're fun to say, like they like almost in like food, like it has a great mouthfeel, right?
You know,
like,
welcome to man, because I I'm glad you said that, because I was gonna say that was my favorite part of the song, because because of the simple fact that like Clev is actually a lyrical fucking beast, man. Clev is a lyrical fucking genius, and her writing is just as crazy as truth is, and that's why they work together so well to me. You know, as their pupil, as their peer. I remember when I first heard the track, and I heard the "Welcome to Prophecy," "Word to my pops, feel like Pac, like I'm prodigy, my therapist proud of me, I play the play, but my partner's." I'm like, yo, are you kidding me, bro? How many times are you gonna use P in this one sentence? I mean, in this bar. So it's like she found however many different ways to use P in one verse, and damn near rhymed them all together like that. And I was like, gee, I don't know if she did that because I'm Simba P. I don't know if she did that just off of the record. I don't know what the inspiration was for it. I've yet to ask her, but god damn, she ripped this beat the fuck up. And I was just so happy when I heard it. I screamed because I was like, yes, this is the energy that I needed.
And you know what, it also like in like a drum set, it reminds me of like that's the snare coming in there, just like, even, and it's not even
it blew my brain, man. It blew my mind away. I'm like, there's no way she is rapping like this. Why?
Right? I'm just gonna also throw in there that there's like, there's that emphasis too, with a lot of it is just very minimal instrumentation going through that with all of these great lyrics. And so it's like the build also builds with that, the lyrics building.
Yeah,
so it just does this really cool play, and it leads you right into that final
That's HK final hook, for you. That's HK. That's Mother Nature. That's the great thinkers. That's how we, just as much as Mother Nature can read what's going on in the song, HK does the same thing. So it's like, we're all working together. So in that instance, I just kind of let you in on a little secret, like in that sense. We'll do what we do, and then he'll come in and he'll build the beat, the rest of the beat, around what we just did. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like around the lyrics that we recorded, around the way that we did it. He knows exactly which spot to put that drop in, which spot to add that build up. You know, it's like working with HK is just amazing, because he learns your style, and he helps build and develop your style in that way. I can honestly attest a lot of the success of this project to him as well as myself, you know, because it was in tandem with me after I did the body work and the skeleton work of all these things. Because mind you, the way that I do it, I kind of just like, okay, this is what I want. These are the songs, this, that, and the third. This is the order. And then he'll be like, all right, we're going to break all this down. This is not the order. We're going to sequence this correctly. And he'll take his time with it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's how you get these beats. That's how you get these things. I was very impatient about it at first. But, you know, as the process was going, I was like, okay, I have to trust this process. I have to trust what he's doing with my work. With an artist and producer relationship like that, you have to have that trust between each other. I had to trust that he knew the vision and that he was going to do exactly what he needed to do. And he did just that. And Mother Nature did just that. Honestly, this song is one of my favorites, and it's one of the most listened to songs on this album, because everybody was just so locked in and everybody was just on it. You know what I'm saying? Very naturally. And it just became a masterpiece, and I love it.
My last question in this section, of course, is, and I feel like you kind of answered it already, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I feel like you could add to it.
Yeah.
Why did you pick this song to be the song you wanted to talk about today?
It's my favorite song on the project. Not only that, it's one of the ones that I always wanted to happen. Since I was 16, I wanted a Mother Nature feature, man. So it's like to finally have that, and it's not just, don't get me wrong, we've already collaborated before this. We've already worked on group music and all this other stuff. But to have them be on my song now, to have them do that and then do what they did, but also for me, like, show like, nah, they're not the only ones carrying the song. This was a very honest full circle moment of me and Mother Nature as now peers, and not just mentee and mentor relationships. And even then, like, I seen myself in a new light after this. I seen what I can really do, because I'm not gonna lie, like, I love my collective members, but when I was doing Space Jam, when I was doing this song, you know, this was me letting them and, you know, everybody else that's watching know, no, I can hold my own, because I'm the new kid, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm the youngest of us. It wasn't like there was a chip on my shoulder, but it was like, you know, it's still competition. I want to make these niggas rap.
Right.
I want to make my collective members rap the way that they make me want to rap, you know? So, like, it was like that, and I feel like I did that, and I feel like, you know, we just make each other so much better, and this song just showcased exactly that.
Champagne Is Also a Band podcast is proud to support Jubilee Cafe. Jubilee Cafe is a free weekly meal program at Community United Church of Christ, 805 South 6th Street in Champaign, Illinois. Jubilee Cafe serves a home-cooked meal from 5 to 6:30 each Monday. Their mission is to feed hungry people by cooking healthy, delicious meals and by serving their guests restaurant style with servers waiting on tables. Jubilee Cafe is open to anyone who cares to eat with them. Because food insecurity among students is so high, they serve students as well as others in and around the Champaign-Urbana community who struggle with hunger. Meals are free to all and will be served each Monday evening. Located in the accessible lower level of the building at 6th and Daniel Streets in Champaign. For more information on the meal or how to volunteer, go to the Jubilee Cafe CUCC Facebook page or email them at jubilee.cafe@community-ucc.org. That's jubilee.cafe@community-ucc.org.
Welcome back. So, Simba, what is your favorite Champaign-Urbana venue, past or present?
Man, so the one that I'm going to say is, you know, I'm sure this is everybody's go-to, everybody's favorite, but Canopy Club is definitely one of my favorites, not only because I used to work there, but because I had a lot of shows there. That's where I got a lot of my footing at in terms of performance-wise, learning how to perform and, like, what that looks like, and built a lot of my, like, performance aspects there, and, like, that's where I got a lot of my footing and things like that. But also, that's where I got a lot of just real time experience on what it's like to be an artist in that area, you know, because I used to work there as a security with Mo and all of them, in terms of just, like, being able to see how the merch table is run, how the artists conduct themselves backstage when I'm back there with them, like, you know, the way the stage is the way the stage is set up, and how the manager manages, just being able to be a sponge in those environments. You know, Canopy Club really allowed me to do that, not only while I was working there, but also while I was, you know, performing there and up and coming, you know. So that's definitely one of my favorites. I don't think Blackbird is around anymore, but I used to rock with Blackbird too, when it was around.
Blackbird, and then it went to Nola's, and
Nola's was fun too. I remember I performed there when it was Nola's.
And now it's the Gallery Art Bar, which actually, if you get the opportunity, stop by and check it out, because it's like total multimedia experience. Like, there's video on the wall, and, like, I don't know, they've done a really good job of making it into an experience. So it's cool.
Ooh, one more venue. They just opened up. This is not just because I'm sponsored by them. New Era. New Era's Green Room.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, New Era's Green Room on campus.
I didn't know that they had a green room. Oh, okay.
That's what it's called. Well, it's not a green room. It's just called the Green Room. For As Above, So Below. It's where I hosted my release party. It was a great time. I believe they're pretty open to having people come into the space and host events and things like that. So definitely tap in with New Era's Green Room.
So where is that actually located? Because New Era is just...
So you got
It's not one location. There's several locations.
There's two in town here. You got the one in Urbana, and then you have the one on Green Street, on First and Green,
as well,
which is the people, which is where I usually shop at, and, you know, where we did that specific show at.
So, okay. Yeah,
definitely tap in with them. They're doing events...
Wow.
All the time now, more so, I think. They're fairly new with it, but, like, they definitely treated me right and did me well.
That's cool. That's cool. No, I guess I shouldn't be amazed anymore, but I am always amazed at how many... There's, like, so many secret venues. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not secret, but, like, they kind of come out of anywhere, you know, that they're kind of their own...
Yeah, not necessarily speakeasies, but, you know, like... You know, like, if you know type of things, and if you want to know, you can find out.
I'm glad to know that that exists, because, you know, we always could use more venues, right?
Oh, yeah.
Not less or whatever.
For sure, but, man. We need more venues. And it's cool because they had a stage there and everything. They got a nice setup. It was, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was awesome. They definitely do their thing over there. They have, like, a couple of things that they do. I know it's not all music and things like that.
Sure. How did you get involved with the Great Thinkers?
Ooh,
like,
that's
I mean,
a story.
I know that's a question, but I mean, that seems like a very integral part of your development as an artist.
Yeah. So I got involved with the Great Thinkers essentially because I was always around. I was always, like, little bro, you know, essentially. I was always a mentee to Mother Nature and things like that. So I met Mother Nature when I was 16, you know, aspiring to be something
right.
at that time. So they, I met them through this thing called Echoes of Emmett. It's crazy because I was just at Centennial with the lady who was helping us, who helped put that together. Her name is Miss Aikman. She's a teacher at Centennial. She was the reason why that happened. She's pretty much the reason why me and Mother Nature even connected. So through doing that, they let me know about the miseducation of hip-hop. I was able to come through with me and my other homies. Lamont Holding was actually there. Professor L was actually there.
Yeah.
And he taught me and my friend how to build a studio in the basement of the IMC. And, you know, that was kind of those beginnings. And at that same time, Truth told me that I could rap. And I got up there and rapped the freestyle in front of a lot of people for the very first time. They gave me my first show through that, you know. I met Great Sky around that same time while he was performing at that same show that they gave me my first show at. Throughout time and throughout life, kind of see people that are on the same path as you. And I remember when I first met Truth and Clever, when you step into the room, that you just feel the energy, you know?
Yeah.
The energy of the room shifts when they walk in. Mm. And mind you, this is like the beginning of them becoming Mother Nature. And it's so, as I said, this is my beginning of me becoming Simba P as well. What ended up happening was I kept seeing them throughout time, Chicago, here, and things like that. They would invite me out to perform and things like that if they were in town doing stuff for the miseducation or what have you, me being an active artist who came through there. As that transpires, that went on, I kept doing my own thing. We ended up competing against each other, me and Mother Nature. We ended up competing against each other in like 2019, 2018, somewhere in that time, to open up for Doja Cat when she came down here at Folinger Hall. So I was talking big shit.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, I'm gonna give y'all a run for y'all money, this, that, and the third. But I mean, whole time I know who they are. Not only do they have Chicago in their back pocket at this point, but they already mastered Champagne. They were already goats in this area, and I was kind of still up and coming at that time. I was known around Champagne, but I wasn't known as Simba P in what I do now at that point in time. So I lost. And what ended up happening was we had talked before, you know what I'm saying, before the competition took off and all these other things. What I didn't know was that they were still going to bring me on stage anyway. And it was just like, we want you to do one of your songs. Send us a record. We'll meet you there. You're going to perform one of your songs with us on stage. And from there, shit got crazy. I was still continuing what I do. I was, you know, trapping a little bit because that's, you know, trying to make ends meet, doing what I could to have money and support myself and my career, which is, if you're in music, you know, that's expensive. One of my friends at that time robbed me at gunpoint for what I had. What ended up happening was I called them. This was shortly after the Doja Cat thing. We're fresh into 2020 at this point, because that's when weed was legalized, right? 2020 or 2019?
Yeah, 2020.
So, 2020. We're fresh into 2020. That happened. So I called them and let them know what happened. I'm not gonna call my parents and be like, hey, I just got all my weed stolen, you know? I just got that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, this is bad. I didn't feel safe at that time. So I called them and they told me to come down. Told me to come to Chicago, figure some stuff out, you know.
Yeah.
Not necessarily hide, but, you know, like, have shelter for a little bit. They gave me shelter. And not only that, I had an opportunity through that to be able to learn from them as my mentors and as Mother Nature and as the Great Thinkers, because they were all, mind you, we're all living together at this time. So when the pandemic hit, I couldn't really go home. So from there, they were just like, where else you gonna go? You can't really go home. You got, you know, you just went through what you went through, and you're dealing with your trauma, and you don't even know if you can be safe over there right now. So this is your life, so you're gonna be here, type of thing. And So I stayed with them. I slept on the studio floor, futon, mattress, right. No bed frame, just the mattress. And I created music every day for the most part. I try to create something every day. I learned from them. They took me to video shoots, great ciphers, and all that other stuff. Next thing I know, I'm a thinker.
Yeah.
It just happened naturally that way. So the best way I can say it is God, you know, kind of did what he did and made the moves necessary to put me in the position that I needed to when I was, you know, doing what I was doing. It was like, you know, you can either stay here and do what you're doing, end up dead or in jail,
right.
Or you can go change your life around.
Huh.
So I went to go change my life around.
I'm struck by the idea that in some ways, not that this was the one and only tipping point for you, but like sometimes really it does just take that one person that actually says, you know, you can do this, right? You can. This is something that's very, very possible for you. And it's like sometimes we believe in our own abilities to a certain extent, but when somebody else can kind of resonate with that, talking about vibes, you know, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that turns out to be a very important thing.
Yeah.
Like, I like to think that just taking the opportunity to find somebody else to support might be just the push that somebody who is extremely talented decides to do something. So anyway, that was my little, sorry for the soapbox, but I'm just like,
stand on it. It's a beautiful thing, man. That's what the miseducation of hip hop is. That's what we do. Like, it's very gratifying work, especially for me to come home and be able to do these things. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been doing work at Kenwood right now, teaching kids how to write songs, how to create music and things like that, what song structure looks like in terms of writing and things like that, getting them ready to perform and things of that nature, doing that with ISYM for their summer camp, through the hip hop camp there, being able to really tap in with the children and the youth and, you know, pull that out of them and let them know you can do these things. You know, somebody did it for me. So it's important to me that I go out and do that for others, really pay it forward, if you will, you know. So then it's something to be on your soapbox about, because that changes lives. That changed people's lives. I'm be able to be blessed to talk to some of these kids who have major troubles in their lives and are in the streets and are going through what they're going through at home that they can't speak on, but they can come to me and, you know, we can talk about some of these things and we can be expressive about some of these things, and I can let you know it's okay to be expressive about some of these things. It's okay to change up your surroundings and your environment to put yourself to where you want to be, and let a lot of the young black boys and, you know, otherwise know that, you know, that there's better ways, that there's ways to do the things that you want to do, and you don't necessarily have to do what I did. You don't necessarily have to go through certain things. You can believe in yourself, and yes, you're going to go through struggles. Yes, you're going to go through hardship. That's life. That's something that you can't avoid, but it's important that people know that they can do it, and that they have examples, and that they have that representation to know that they can do that. Because without that, I wouldn't be here. And, you know, who knows what those children I speak to today are going to be doing in the next 5-10 years, you know, in terms of their trajectory and what they can or want to do. So, you know, I'm talking to a lot of these kids, and they don't know half things they want to do, and that's fine, you know. Just take your time and do everything, and then lean into the thing that you feel the most. So it's been a very beautiful journey to once be a kid and know that, go through what I went through, and now be able to apply what I've learned and teach others to do better, and teach others that they can do whatever it is that they want to do. You feel me? Any schools, anywhere that you feel that the miseducation of hip hop is needed in terms of growth, healing of trauma, or teaching, you know, let us know. We are around. We are on Instagram. At the Miseducation of Hip Hop, we do workshops and we cater to your needs and what you need. So definitely call on us, and we are here to help.
What would you say in general, like the miseducation of hip hop, like when you go to a school, how does that work? Like, I don't know.
It's not traditional. Let me tell you that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not traditional. A lot of it is getting kids comfortable. You know, letting them know this is a safe space to express yourself, making sure that is the bottom line, because, you know, kids are kids. So it's like setting that intention in the space and letting it be known what you're there to do. But it's always interesting, because when I tell them who I am, tell them what I do, they open up instantly. You know, they're it's like, oh, you're a rapper and you're actually good at it. Can I see something? Can you show me what you do?
Right.
And then I'll rap and then be like, oh my God, yeah, this, that, and the third. Instantly, palm of my hand, you know, now they're listening. Yeah. so it's like to be able to go in there and do these things and be able to incite that change and just be the change that I want to see in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It feels amazing. Like I said, it's not really traditional, but it's something that I've noticed the people we work with, they have an open mind to it, because it's not always something that's going to allow for censorship, because expression shouldn't always be censored. In a school setting, that's tough, depending on the age group you're working with and depending on like the political settings and all of that of the environment. So it can go a lot of different ways, but it's always been great with me. It's always been on a positive note, simply because, you know, it's the intention of it. We're here to help. We're here to heal through ways that people, through something that people think is negative, through something that automatically has a negative connotation due to the way that media portrays it to be. Mm-hmm. The curriculum is to change the narrative and let you know that this is what hip hop was originally for, to each one, teach one, learn and grow together. So once people see that, they look past all the rest of it. They look past the other things because, oh, this is what it is in its essence. This is what hip-hop was supposed to be before it got tainted with everything else. And I understand, you know, the drill moving, all the trap stuff, there's always a place for militants in its spaces, but in the right facets. So it's interesting and it's not conventional, but I think it's beautiful that it's being embraced in school settings and school environments. But I know why. It's because it's how you can connect. It's how you can connect with the kids these days and the kids this day and age. Because a lot of teachers, speaking from experience being an educator, don't know how to do that. They have no idea what these kids are watching. They have no idea what these kids are listening to. And they have no idea how to really connect with children in that way. And the miseducation of hip-hop does that. It does exactly that. And that's the curriculum, you know what I'm saying? So,
what do you think makes a good music community? And even on a larger scale, even though I'm just going to loop in the miseducation of hip-hop, you may use music, but that's not necessarily what you're trying to create either. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm going to add and tack on, you know, not only is it what makes a good music community, but like what makes a good community? Because I think in this context, they're synonymous, right?
Yeah.
So,
anything that involves growth, that involves building, takes a village, takes collaboration, takes teamwork, and it takes support. So what makes a great music community is supporting each other, is, you know, showing each other that love. But also, like I said, it's each one, teach one, learn and grow together. There's a lot of gatekeeping that goes along in the music communities. There's a lot of, I don't want you to be better than me in music communities. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of egos that go around. But that makes us forget what hip hop is. It's each one, teach one, learn and grow together. You know what I'm saying? What makes for a good music scene is learning and growing together. You know, the thinkers are who we are and are where we are because we utilize each other. We utilize each other's knowledge. We utilize each other's abilities and our different expertises and things like that to teach each other to grow and things of that nature. And I've noticed in some music scenes that's not a thing. It's becoming a thing in Champaign now. It's becoming more relevant now and more of a thing, but we had to make it a trend for it to get that way. The thing that makes any community thrive is being together and moving as a community. One of the biggest words in community is unity. It can't be a lot of I's. It can't be a lot of me's. It takes going out into those schools and even these kids on the street, they be out here, you can talk to them and all of that. And that's a part of the community. That's a part of the village, you know? So being able to be a village and hold each other up, pay for each other things, support each other, pay for your local artist stuff at full price, the same way you would a local venue or a local restaurant. If you want them to thrive and you want them to have that business and you really want to see each other win, support each other. That's what makes any thriving community. So in a societal sense, but also in a music sense, because one of my favorite things to talk to the kids about is a school is your first shot at a community. It's your first shot at building community. It's first shot at understanding cypher. And the cypher is literally just one piece of the community. So what you're doing within your cypher be it your friend group, your job, or any of those things,
yeah.
ultimately pours out into the community. It ultimately changes all of those things. So, you know, the ciphers, the individual ciphers within Champaign, Chicago, and all those other stuff, they got to support, they got to learn what it means to support each other. And then those ciphers can learn how to do that as a community in terms of what does that look like when the great thinkers are supporting artists like Pivot Gang. I don't know if you know who Pivot Gang are, but Saba and all of them. What does that look like when those two groups are supporting each other? Will that create for a bigger community? Will that energy and vibration spread and cause other people to start building on that type of time? You can't build Rome by yourself, and it was not built in a day. So you need the strength of your actual community. And that comes from support. That comes from loving each other and really, like, actually caring about what your local artist does as right. much as you would the bigger artist. You feel
sure.
me?
Oh yeah.
If that makes sense. But yeah, I think that'd be my take on it.
Champaign Is Also a Band podcast is proud to support Exile on Main Street. Exile on Main Street, located in the old train station building at 100 North Chestnut Street in downtown Champaign, has been helping to build record collections since 2004. Carrying a wide array of new and used LPs, CDs, and video games, Exile on Main Street has something for just about any music enthusiast and old-school gaming devotee. Exile also hosts regular free live music shows on its stage, so be sure to check out their Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages for the up-to-date details on the next upcoming event. Open 7 days a week, they can be reached by phone at 217-398-MAIN. That's 217-398-6246.
Welcome back. So, Simba, what is your favorite non-musical thing or things?
Video games is one of my favorite non-musical things. My girlfriend hates it, but I love it.
Right?
Video games. Also, spending time with my family, man. Anybody that knows me knows that quality time is like my biggest love language. You know, so spending time with my girl, spending time with my family, spending time with friends and loved ones. That's one of the things that I love to do outside of music. To quote Kendrick Lamar, I am not in the music business. I am in the human business. So it's literally that. That and, you know, education, man. Educating the youth, being a mentor to people and teaching others outside of music. I know you said non-music, but, you know, that's not really creating. That's just being somebody who wants to help others, you know, being a healer. You know, I just love people. I love things, and I love video games. So that's how I be at. One of my newest ventures right now, I've been working on clothing and, like, designing a couple of things. I started off with some t-shirts. I'm doing, right now I'm working on season 3 of the As Above, So Below line. We dropped some t-shirts not too long ago. Those are still available. I exclusively dropped, it was a very small drop. I didn't put it out on social media or anything like that publicly. I just put it out on a little broadcast channel for the fans and things like that to get directly first. But I'm doing, I have some new colorways of hoodies right now that I'm putting out for the As Above, So Below series. They have flock lettering, so it's like super soft. The lettering on it is super soft, font of it. And then I have two colors. I got cream and I got black, like an inverse, so it's cream and black, cream with black lettering, and then we got the inverse with the black and cream lettering. So that's my latest drop right now. So I'm working on a couple more ideas and things like that, but that's my newest venture right now.
So if you didn't hear that, because I was talking at the same time, Simba just dropped that he also acts. So we're gonna have to come back to that.
Oh, you kind of. So how did you get into the clothing line, and then also we are going to circle back to the acting part.
But, okay, for sure. Eli to Infinity is his name on Instagram, but he had a lot of clothing. One of his biggest brands right now is called Based Around Magic, but he was the one who helped me really get in tune with that side of myself in terms of what that looks like. He's a very hands-on creative designer when it comes to clothing. He literally uses, he literally makes his own clothes. Like, he literally creates creates these things from scratch, damn near. Like, he'll find some jeans from Levi and turn those jeans into a jacket. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Some crazy shit in that shape or form. He's the one who taught me pretty much, you know, what that looks like, how to buy sweatshirts in bulk, mm-hmm. what the printing press looks like, what selling it looks like, and all of those things like that. So Eli has definitely been a major, major help in terms of getting my, like, designed things sure. together in terms of what I want to do for my merchandise and things like that, and like clothing and things of that nature. He actually was the one who came up with the logo for what the As Above So Below line has, you know.
Okay.
It was our design, but it was his idea, you know what I'm saying? So
gotcha.
it was a very beautiful thing to be able to build with him as well. So
it's circling back to the acting that you surreptitiously
just threw in there.
dropped in. Like, so what's that all about? You know?
It's something that kind of fell on my lap. Something that people told me to do, but I never really, like, paid attention to mm-hmm. until it started paying attention to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. I remember when I first got to Chicago, one of my friends, his name is Taj, he was my photographer for a while. And he basically put me in tune with this casting agency called Four Star Casting. What happened was he got me on Empire. He got me on Empire, the show Empire, as an extra. And I started doing that. From there, I did a couple more shows, like a show called Paper Girls, a show called, the most important one, the one that I'm known for right now in acting, is Power.
You were in Paper Girls?
I was in Paper Girls for like a second.
I mean,
I was smoking a cigarette in the car. And yes, they paid me extra to smoke the cigarette. But
interesting.
But all
right.
Beyond that, that was actually a funny scene, because I was like just going through a fucking pack of cigarettes, dude. Like, because they had to redo so many reshoots.
No, it's probably the same kind of idea as, you know, if they do like a food commercial or something, it's like you're never supposed to actually swallow the food. You're supposed to.
So it's like, I'm in there smoking it, but not like really smoking it.
Right, right. But I was just like, oh.
It was gross.
Yeah.
Beyond that, though, my most, the one that I'm most popular for right now is Power, my role in Power. Book 4 for season 2. I played a bully in that, and I was bully / gangster, but you know, it was fun. It was an amazing time. That, like I said, this kind of fell in my lap. I just kind of once the Empire thing happened, I kind of just kept going. You know, I was like, okay, these are opportunities. They're paying me to be here. I'm on camera.
There's craft services.
Just craft services, free food. I'm like, you know what? This is easy money right now. Let's go ahead and do this. But little did I know, when I started doing Power, they were gonna move me up into the camera and like actually like be like, yeah, you're gonna be a background and extra, but you're gonna be featured. I was like, oh, that's cool. All right, that's fun. I didn't know that when I pulled up to set. I found out once I got to set. So it was interesting. So from there, I wanted to take it seriously. So I started to, because I'm like, okay, I'm actually on the camera now. These people think I have a look, and I'm actually kind of good at this. So let's see how this goes. Mm-hmm. So I started taking it seriously. I started taking acting classes at Acting Studio Chicago and things like that. I learned a few things from those classes. Now I'm doing auditions for movies and more TV shows and stuff like that.
First thing, I'm going to just say thank you for letting me experience some of your love language, which is spending some time
with
me talking about, you know, your music and everything. So it's a pleasure to hear about, you know, education and growing. Well, I mean, mainly my point was going to be that a lot of the things that you focus on are about like growing and becoming better each day. Yeah. And I feel like in order to meet those goals is also by the way that you share those things that you do,
mm-hmm.
sharing experiences and sharing your time, you know, that's how people grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I think it's interesting. You've got a nice little synergistic quality about, you know.
Thank you, thank you.
Very balanced.
Thank you, thank you. That's the whole point of As Above, So Below, and that's been the lesson of my life is balance. So I try to teach it.
Simba P, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Sven, for having me. Thank you, thank you.
And telling me about your song Failure Is Not an Option, featuring Mother Nature, off of your album As Above, So Below.
Yes, indeed.
And tell me about community and the miseducation of hip-hop and basically all of your non your favorite non-musical things. And I don't know, it's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed just sitting here, enjoying these tequila sunrises here at Guido's. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me. This has been an amazing time. I've enjoyed talking to you as well, man. Thank you for listening to Champagne Is Also a Band podcast. This is Simba P reminding you great music is out there. Go find it where you live.
Champagne is also a band.
You almost have an NPR voice. It's so good.
Luhama Studio, South Baker, on the inside.